You're listening to the Author Stories Podcast, bringing you the story behind the stories and the storytellers.
Margaret Wise,
Terry Brooks,
Sheena Kamal,
Matthew Quick,
J.T. Ellison,
Walt D. Williams,
Brad Ford,
Corey Doctorow,
Brandon Sanderson,
Robin Mom,
Ernest Klein, Jim Butcher,
Sherilyn Harris.
Visit HankGarner.com for archives of all the shows. Today's guest is
Justin DePillo.
Thanks for tuning into Author Stories, the podcast where we bring you the story behind the stories and the storyteller. Author interviews, writing advice, book reviews, all sorts of great stuff. If you are a book lover, Author Stories is the place for you. We have more than 550 author interviews in our archives at HankGarner.com. Please go over there and check it out. Also, check out our YouTube channel, where we also have all of the episodes archived there. If you don't find an author interview that you're looking for on the website, click on the Archives tab. There's a long list of them where you can click and download and listen right there. I'd like to tell you about some sponsors that make the show possible. The Locus, books 1-3 by Ralph Kern. The complete Locus series, an epic tale of mystery, survival, exploration, intrigue. The cruise ship MS Atlantica is lost on these strange and uncharted seas where even the compass shows the sun rising to the west. Atlantica's passengers must do what it takes to survive. The three books, Unfathomed, Expedition, and Osiris. Atlantica arrives in a strange new world, unable to locate land and with no way to contact home. They must find new allies, fend off relentless enemies, and discover the horrifying truth behind the Locus. The Locus box set contains all three action-packed novels in this best-selling science book. Unfathomed, Expedition, and Osiris. Acclaimed for great characters, thrilling action, technical accuracy, and a compelling sense of mystery. Buy it today from Ralph Kern. The Locus. The Renegade Star Series, books 1-3 from J.N. Chaney. Jace Hughes is a renegade. That means taking almost any job that comes his way, no matter the situation. So long as he can keep his ship floating, he's free to live the life he wants. But that all changes when he meets Abigail Pryor, a nun looking for safe passage out of the system. Too bad there's something off about the cargo she's carrying. Jace knows he shouldn't ask too many questions, but when odd sounds start coming from inside the large metal box, he can't help but check it out. Big mistake. The Renegade Star box set includes the first three books in the series, 900-plus pages, 300-plus five-star reviews. Find out why people are so intrigued by this thrilling science fiction epic. You won't believe the twists and turns this series takes, or the secrets that get revealed. The Renegade Star series, get the entire box set on Amazon, or audiobook from audible.com. There's links to it in the show notes. Well, thanks for joining me again for the Author Stories Podcast, where I bring you the story behind the stories and the storytellers. Today, I'm really excited to have Jill Santopolo back on the show with us. She was on the show last year at episode 422, talking about her book, The Light We Lost. And she has a brand new book called More Than Words out now. And we're excited to talk about it. Welcome to the show, Jill.
Thank you so much for having me back.
Well, I'm excited to have you back. So you've had a pretty busy year since last year. What's been going on?
I've been writing a new book. I've been writing More Than Words, which has been a lot of fun.
Yeah. So the previous book, The Light We Lost, was your first foray into adult fiction, kind of truly adult fiction.
Right.
How has that transition been for you, and has it been as fulfilling as you hoped?
It's been really wonderful. You know, I love writing kids' books, and I still do love going into schools and talking about them because kids are great, and they have hilarious and really smart observations about stories and about writing, and they have great ideas. And when I go into schools, I always do these brainstorming story events with the kids, and they come up with really, really great stuff. But, you know, with The Light We Lost, I realized that the same kind of thing happens, not in the same way, obviously, but I get Instagram messages and Twitter messages and Facebook messages and emails all the time from readers all over the world, really, who've read The Light We Lost and wanted to tell me, you know, how much they enjoyed it, or that it reminded them of a situation that they went through, or, you know, that it made them think about something differently. And it's really, really, really rewarding and really wonderful to sort of feel that connection with readers, which is the same way I was feeling that connection with kids in at school visits. So I was worried that I was going to miss that reader-author sort of, you know, bond.
Right.
But I'm getting it in a totally different way, and it's equally as wonderful.
Well, your books for kids, I know your Sparkle Spa series is hugely popular and resonates with readers in a certain particular way. And your adult fiction, you know, The Light We Lost, is a deeply emotionally resonant book. When you sit down to write kids for kids or for adults, are your intentions different? Do you hope to strike a certain chord with each? And does each genre or audience afford you certain things creatively that the other just can't do?
That's such a great question. So I think, you know, I think when I write for children or for adults, what I'm trying to do is put myself in that world. So when I'm writing The Sparkle Spa, where the oldest character is 11, I sort of try and put myself in the world of an 11-year-old. So any concerns that an 11-year-old wouldn't have are not in the book. So, you know, things like having children or,
right,
you know, whether or not your boyfriend will or won't propose, you know, those are just, they're not there in The Sparkle Spa because it's not really what was worrying to an 11-year-old. So what's really nice about writing for adults is I can use sort of all experiences and of my life and everything that I've thought about to pull material from. Whereas for The Sparkle Spa, sort of it's that cap at age 11. And I think I do very much sort of try and keep in mind the emotional maturity of an 8, 9, 10, 11-year-old when I'm writing those books. But then also understanding that when I write adult books, I can go there much more in emotion because ideally, you know, adults who are reading those books are more emotionally mature than they were at 11.
Right. Well, you know, on the surface, you think, well, of course, if you're writing for kids or adults, it's two completely different things. And one is going to more naturally be serious. One is going to be more, you know, age appropriate. And to an adult, maybe come up silly or, you know, whatever the initial reaction is. But I think you can't just dismiss children's fiction that easily, as something that's not lasting or, something not, you know, resonant with people, because there are lots of kid series that I read as a kid that still I hang on to today. Like they meant something very deep to me then, that now, of course, you know, from my mid 40s, you know, look to be very, you know, immature or whatever. But, you know, when you're writing to that age appropriate audience, the same kind of care goes into those books, doesn't it?
Absolutely. And I think, you know, there are a lot of really, really beautiful children's books and really emotionally deep children's books that are out there. I mean, I remember growing up, Bridge to Terabithia and Jacob Have I Loved, you know, were two of my favorite books in fifth or sixth grade. And, you know, they're about the death of a friend. They're about, you know, the competition and jealousy between siblings and the complicated relationships within a family. So I think that there are, you know, absolutely deep and emotional books that you can write for children. But I think, you know, it's that same thought of what could an 11-year-old be dealing with, and how do they sort of internalize these experiences? I mean, Sparkle Spa is a little lighter and intentionally written a little bit lighter. But, you know, there are still issues that they deal with in the Sparkle Spa, too, you know.
Right.
Competition between siblings and friends, and, you know, somebody breaking their arm or getting sick, or just, you know, things that you have to handle that life throws your way when you're 11.
Right. When you wrote The Light We Lost, were you, I know you've talked about getting, you know, feedback from readers all around the world. Were you surprised that this book, really connected with so many people?
Well, I was floored. I always say, like, this is the craziest thing that ever happened in my whole life, that people in, you know, Romania and France and India and Mexico and Spain and Italy are all emailing me. Norway. I mean, I get these incredible messages from all over the world, and it kind of blows me away every time. I mean, especially because when I wrote The Light We Lost, I wrote it from such a personal place. I was sort of writing it from my own feelings after going through a breakup. So the fact that this intimate feeling was so resonant was amazing. I mean, it's incredible. And it just really makes me realize how similar everybody is, no matter what country you live in, what language you speak, what your experience is like growing up. Everyone has experienced love and loss in some kind of way. And I think because of that, reading about someone else who's experienced it just kind of is a connector. It strikes a chord.
Right. When you're reading that first book for adults, it's kind of like you're a debut author all over again, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Nobody knew who I was.
Right. Well, and you know, what comes with that is no one expects anything from you, and because they don't know who you are. And here's Jill writing this new book for adults, and it'll probably be great. That's awesome. But no one knows it. Well, now that you've had a success like that, and now you're following up with your new book, More Than Words, what's the pressure like in following up that first big success?
I mean, there is definitely pressure. Mostly, I think that I've put on myself that I don't want to disappoint all those readers. Because, you know, so many people who've sent me these notes have said at the end, like, I can't wait to read your next book. And I'm like, oh, gosh, I hope they like it. I just don't want to disappoint anyone.
So, what was the motivation for the new book? How did the story come to you? When you have an idea for a book, does mm-hmm. it come to you usually as a character or as a setting, a plot situation? How does it usually come to you?
Well, so this one came to me because my father passed away about 4 years ago, and after he had passed away, and you know, I was sitting with my two sisters and my mom. One of his friends came up to me and said to me, I think you're going to write about this one day. And to be honest, at the time, I was kind of livid because I was like, how could I ever write about this? This experience that has just devastated me, like I could never turn this into anything other than what it is. But then after The Light We Lost came out and I was sort of trying to figure out new ideas, literally every idea I came up with had a father who died. And I was like, all right, I guess this is what I'm doing, because there's nothing, I'm going to be able to write about anything else until I do write about this. So he was probably right and I shouldn't have been so livid. And that was kind of, I think, part of it. And then another piece was that after my father passed away, I was seeing my mom clean out, like, you know, his part of the bedroom. And I opened up the drawer on his nightstand, and inside it, I found all of these letters that he had saved that my sisters and I and my mother had written to him every single birthday, Father's Day, holiday. He had saved every single one for nearly 40 years. And as I was kind of going through them and trying to figure out, like, can I organize these chronologically? Can I organize these by person who sent it to him? Like, what should I do? I thought, what if I find a letter in here that has something in it that I didn't want to know about him? Like, what if that happened? And it didn't. Of course it didn't.
Right.
But
it's such a provocative question.
Right. It was sort of one of these things that got stuck in my head, I think. So then when I was writing More Than Words, that's kind of what happens, is Nina's father passes away and she finds all of these secrets that he'd been keeping from her for her entire life. And it kind of changes the way she feels about her childhood and her parents' marriage and herself and her future and all of that.
Mm. Do you, obviously there's a connection, between you and Nina in the surface situation. Obviously you didn't find out things like that about your dad and didn't have those, kind of soul crushing questions that come with, you know, your childhood being a lie and all that stuff. But, is there a connection between you and Nina as you start exploring, kind of the similar setting, the setup for the story?
Well, you know, with More Than Words, a lot of people ask me if that's autobiographical, and with The Light We Lost. It's very confusing now that I have two books to talk about, right? With The Light We Lost, people often ask me if it's autobiographical, and the answer that I tend to give people is that it's emotionally autobiographical, that Lucy and I are very different people, we live very different lives, but the emotions that she was feeling after a breakup are sort of the same ones that I was feeling, you know, that I channeled into this book. And I think a similar thing happened with More Than Words. You know, Nina and I are very different, our upbringings, our personalities are pretty different, but I think that the feelings that she has, the relationship she has with her dad and the devastation she feels when he's gone were very much sort of my own emotions that I kind of channeled into the story.
Yeah. What was the motivation for setting it in New York City?
Oh, I love New York City and I've lived here forever. And it's just a city that I know so well. I felt like I could write about it really well. And also, you know, there's the whole old New York kind of elegant money vibe. And I really wanted to capture that as part of Nina's life. And like, it was, I could do in New York City and, you know, nearby and all of that.
It's, New York really kind of becomes a character, in the book. It definitely kind of, exudes this, this kind of society and this, this place that's like no other place in the world. It's really fascinating the way you describe it and portray it.
I mean, I love a lot of cities. I've traveled a bunch and I think they're really wonderful, incredible cities all over the world that I'd, you know, love to live in for a little while or visit again. But I really do think that New York City is a really unique feeling city. And there's just so much energy and so much art and food and culture. And then also just there's like the grittiness of it and the smells of the pretzel guys and the chestnut guys on the street and the yellow cabs. Like I feel like there's so much about New York that is just so New York. And it gives me a lot of energy, you know, to sort of pull from, when I'm writing or doing anything really.
Well, it's those little details that really, help transport a reader to, you know, where a story about real life that you know could happen to any one of us kind of becomes fantasy in a way where we can escape to this other world that's, you know, just up the map from us.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know, like The Light We Lost, this book explores the complications of relationships and interpersonal, workings and how we connect and communicate with others. What are, other than the initial story, how would you separate these two books in kind of how people will connect with them?
Well, I feel like The Light We Lost is a story about love with a little bit of loss in it. And yeah. I feel like More Than Words is a story about loss with a little bit of love in it.
But I think like that.
Thank you. I think both of them, though, are really just explore what love is in all of its forms. In, you know, familial love and friendship love and romantic love and I think they're all kind of and love of your city or you know your job or some, things like that, just kind of the different ways in which we as human beings love in our lives and what they mean to us and how they shape us.
Do you think it's easier or harder to write a book about grief and loss as kind of the main theme? Those emotions can really strike a chord deeply with readers, and there's a certain palette that you get to paint with when dealing with those emotions that are not available to authors who write different kinds of stories. Is it easier or harder to get to that emotional place to be able to tell a story like this?
I mean, I think I happen to be a writer who can easily access emotion, and I don't know if that's true of everyone, but it is true of me, and I think so much of my writing is motivated by emotion or you know, that's at the core of the stories that I tell. But I do think that what's harder about writing a lot more about grief, you know, or writing about grief in general, is that you also don't want the book to be too sad. You don't want to sort of have your readers, you know, go down into the spiral of darkness with you. So I was trying really hard with More Than Words to kind of balance the darkness with light in any way that I could, so that the book itself, you know, while it's sad, isn't too sad to read, you know, isn't too hard to get through.
Right. Right. And, you know, in the book that give us that glimpse of light and hope, are those things that you think about when you're writing, you know, okay, I've got to let the reader off the hook just a little bit here. you know, I've got to give them something to look forward to. Is that something that you're conscious of in the writing to be sure to pace the story in a way that we all don't just fall into despair?
I think that, yes, I think I do. I do kind of look at pacing and look at emotional pacing as well as plot pacing to figure out, like, okay, we need to take a breath here. This is getting to be a bit much. Or, like, you know what, I need to maybe telescope these scenes a little bit because I've spent too much time wallowing in dark over here and I want to get that, you know, a little tighter.
Right. When you're, so we know that how the book begins and kind of what the setup is that brings us into Nina's journey here. What does this kind of story allow, Nina to learn, about herself, about her family, about what, you know, real love and dedication and all of that stuff is, by this situation that you put her in?
I mean, I think what Nina ends up learning is that, you know, we all go around in this world once, and that if she's going to live her life, she wants to live it as authentically as she can, and she wants to be her honest self and not hide pieces of her from the people she loves or feel like she has to hide pieces of her for people to love her. And I think she kind of ends up putting herself out there and saying, like, this is who I am, and I'm going to be who I am and do what strikes me as important. and hope that the people around me will love me for me and not for who they want me to be.
Right. How have you seen your writing process change from writing kids fiction to writing adult fiction to now, you know, your second book is being published now. Have you changed the work in the way that you approach it?
So with children's books, I was a very, very intricate outliner because I felt like the books were short and they had to be really tight, and I didn't have extra space in there to kind of meander.
Right.
So I would do a chapter-by-chapter outline of the whole book before I wrote it. And the outlining took almost as long as the actual writing because I was really just giving myself a roadmap so that when I sat down to write, I knew exactly what had to happen in each scene, in each story. With The Light We Lost, I didn't know I was writing a novel. I was just kind of writing for myself, really. And I was writing these vignettes that then kind of became a novel. So I didn't really plot that much out, though there was a point where I was like, all right, if this is going to be a novel, I need to know where the story's going. I need to know what everyone is going to do and how they're going to end up. But it was a much sort of freer process. And then for More Than Words, since I knew I was writing a novel and somebody, you know, was paying me to do it and have it done, I was like, all right, let's see kind of if I can outline a little bit, kind of figure out what's going on here before I sit down to write it. And I did that, but it ended up changing a whole bunch from the part that I outlined, I think, because I was giving myself freedom to develop the characters and have the characters go where the story felt like it would take them, and that wasn't always where I initially thought it was going to be.
Does having that roadmap when writing adult fiction, even though you strayed from it and you know, you gave the characters the freedom and the room to breathe and to mature and do whatever it is that they're going to do, did having that roadmap help you, you know, just your sanity when you sit down to write, okay, now I know what needs to happen in this book, you know, instead of just sitting down and going, I have no idea what's going on today?
Yeah, I think it did. It gave me a direction to go in.
Yeah.
Which I think was helpful to sort of say, like, all right, I'm aiming for this point. I'm aiming for this to happen. So let's sort of write in that direction and see where we go. You know, it's sort of like without, you might not map out how you're going to get there, but if I'm like, all right, I need to go west, I can find some roads that go west, and then let's figure it out from there.
Right. I ultimately want to be in Wyoming. Now, right. If I go through, you know, St. Louis or Dallas, I can still get there. But
exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah, gotcha. Gotcha. Jill, the book is fantastic. I think everyone should pick up, you know, More Than Words and The Light We Lost. And I'm going to put a link to our previous interview in the show notes so people can catch up and then, follow up with this one as well. What do you hope, as the writer that when people close, this book, More Than Words, when they're finished with it, what do you think what do you hope they're left with?
I hope they're left with the idea of life being finite, so making every moment and every choice count in any way that you can.
That's fantastic. The book is More Than Words. It's available everywhere now. Jill, where can people find you online if they want to connect with you and learn more about you and all of that good stuff?
So I'm on Twitter at Jill Santopolo. I am on Instagram at Jill Santopolo. I'm on Facebook at @JillSantopoloAuthor. And I have a website, JillSantopolo.com. For the most content, I would say I'm on Instagram the most often. So that if you're looking for one place, that would be the best one to find me.
Excellent. We're going to put links to all of it in the show notes. Jill, it's always a blast talking to you. Thank you so much for sharing your time with us, and good luck with More Than Words.
Thank you so much. It was great talking to you again.
Thanks for tuning in to Author Stories. Find all the archives at hankgarner.com. Now, stay tuned for a special audiobook clip from Richard Gleaves, the Jason Crane series.
On Walpurgis night, when the moon is high, hell's bells ring and witches must answer. They dapple their breasts with rendered fat of murdered babes, straddle their brooms and take to the sky, as the devil wills, to speed through dreamy midnight air to the summit of the Brockenberg, that haunted peak shrouded in swirling mists, where a glen of gnarled limbs and wan moonlight awaits to host their debauches and blasphemies. Now to the Brocken the witches ride. The stubble is gold and the corn is green. There shall the carnival's sabbat be seen, and the devil shall come to preside. The accuser elopes from the bowels of hell, a sure-footed, goat-headed, many-horned beast with cloven hooves and a staff of bone. He perches upon the witch altar to brood in cerulean half-light, a winged silhouette with watchful red eyes. The witches gather and bow to their master, upon his charred rump give the shameful kiss, then imps beat the drum and a round dance begins. Lash yourselves into frenzy, hags. Pass the chalice of pure marrow broth. Whip the ground with your hair. Tread the sky with your feet. Dance with joined hands around Satan's cold fire. Then find out a nook of nettles and moss and lay with the rough-skinned beast of your choosing, suckling some rancid teat of desire. But hist! The cock crows. Away, away! Gather your tatters and broomsticks and wits back to your huts, to your thresholds and hearths, and become once more, at the red break of day, the furtive adder in your neighbor's garden. The ghost host of the Salem Sorcery Tour, dazzling in his steampunk Victorian morning crepe, let the spell he'd woven trail through the twilight air like a hag across the moon, then chirped, "Isn't that silly?" and bowed, sweeping the wet grass with his satin-ribboned top hat. The tour group gave a polite round of applause. Nobody believes that stuff today, but the Puritans sure did. They took witches very seriously. If they went down in the morning and bought eggs, and one was rotten, surely the devil had come in the night, gone boop, tee-hee-hee, then scampered off on his little hooves. And who's in league with the devil? Witches. We're taught that the Puritans were super nice and cute with little buckles on their hats, but it's not the case, folks. They were fanatics. Witch hunts don't happen in a healthy society. They hated kids. They hated women. They were crazy. And that craziness. He turned on the spot, casting a protective circle around the stone garden of the witch memorial. Got these people killed.